Hello, my friends. I'm Bill McLaughlin. Welcome to St. Paul Sunday.
St. Paul Sunday is produced by Minnesota Public Radio and made possible by a major grant from the Minnesota-based General Mills Foundation, supporting excellence in education, human services, and the arts. Additional funding has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and by this Public Radio International station. Join us today with our guests, the Emerson String Quartet.
It occurs to me that one measure of the way a society holds an artist in regard is to have a look at how badly the artist is treated when he gets into trouble. Now, I know that's rather perverse way to start a program on string quartet music, especially that of Shostakovich, but if you think for a moment of the American experience in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, you can each pick your favorite decade and think of your favorite artist and about the most trouble he or she was able to get into. I guess for me, one of the crucial periods would be that time right after the Second World War when a lot of American artists were brought before the House on American Activities Committee, and some of them blacklisted or made to quit working in the film business particularly. That was awful, but it doesn't compare with the treatment of Soviet artists, for example, in the 1930s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and so on, where we then saw artists being executed, being put into prison, into the gulags, having their works blacklisted so that their names were not even permitted to be pronounced on the radio. We're dealing today with the work of the great Russian composer, Dmitri Shostakovich, and in particular, his string quartets. And as we go through this music today, we'll try to establish a very close relationship between the music Shostakovich was writing and his experience as the first Soviet great composer. He was born in 1906, the year after the abortive revolution of 1905. And in those early years, he was born just, for example, in St. Petersburg. He went to grade school in Petrograd. As a conservatory student, he was in Leningrad, and he'd never moved out of town. That gives you some idea of this journey within a city that he was making as part of the Russian political development. I have some fellow explorers to help us on our journey today, four great friends who play extraordinarily well as a quartet. It's the Emerson String Quartet, and the four of you have been spending a great deal of time studying the work of Shostakovich. Let's meet our old friends to begin with. Playing first violin on our first piece will be Eugene Drucker. It's great to see you again.
Great to be here with you.
And this is such an exciting project. I'm glad we can get together. Philip Setzer is going to be playing first violin on the final of our works today,
isn't
it? Yep. Yeah, it's great to see you again.
Nice to be here.
And David Finkel is our cellist. Always wonderful to see you.
Welcome to New York.
Thanks. It's great to be here. And Lawrence Dutton, our violist.
How you doing, Bill?
Yeah, this brings back memories of shows we did here in this room with Oskar Shumsky and some of the other things
yeah,
he played. But today we're talking about Shostakovich because you're just bringing out the complete cycle Shostakovich quartets on a Deutsche Grammophon production. In today's program, we're going to have movements of two Shostakovich quartets and then hear the 13th quartet in its entirety at the end. How did you pick this first piece that we're going to play, which is the first movement of the second quartet? What was, out of all his music, why did you say, let's start with this one?
But we wanted to have something that was representative of the early quartets. And the first quartet is interesting because it follows very close upon the heels of the Fifth Symphony and its complete contrast. It's very innocent, naive sounding, and relatively happy music in general for Shostakovich. The second quartet is a much broader canvas, and it was written during the Second World War, yet it is still within his early output. It's written about 4 or 5 years after the first quartet, and I think it utilizes the medium of the string quartet in a more intriguing way. The first movement is an overture, and it's written in sonata form.
Let's hear it. Here's the Emerson Quartet. As I say, we're coming from the American Academy of Arts and Letters here in New York City. We're listening to music of Dmitri Shostakovich, the quartet number 2, opus 88. We hear the first movement marked overture.
Thank you.
Sound, just for one way to think about this music. We've been listening to music of Dmitri Shostakovich from the Quartet Number 2, Opus 68. We heard the first movement played by the Emerson String Quartet. We're coming to you today from the American Academy of Arts and Letters in New York City. And you've tuned in, if you've just tuned in the last couple of minutes, to the middle of a program entirely about the music of Dmitri Shostakovich, the string quartets. Interesting thing is, in the very earliest years of the Russian Revolution, it seemed that Soviets were very open to all sorts of new things, new art. They brought in the most advanced artists from the West, pictorial artists, musicians, writers. And it clamped down in a hurry in the mid-20s, especially around the death of Lenin. By that time, he was gone, and Stalin assumed the leadership, which was to hold all the way to 1953. An iron hand came down on the Soviets in every way. I mean, millions died in the persecutions, the starvations, the gulags, the executions, and for the artists, poor Shostakovich spent his life, from the time he was in his mid-20s, being whipsawed back and forth between occasional periods when it would seem as if he could write as he pleased and would be rewarded for that, and then being smacked in the face by the most difficult kind of criticism. He actually never spent any time in prison that I know of, but it seems to have affected him as strongly in a way, didn't it?
In some ways, it might have, in a strange way, he might have felt better about himself as an old man if he had spent some time in prison. I think one of the things that tortured him toward the end of his life was that he felt that he had been tortured, and certainly he was psychologically, but I think that he felt that others judged him wrongly as being a communist composer and a cooperator, a collaborator, and someone who hadn't really challenged enough to be punished the way some other people were.
I read a line. There was a rather well-known Jewish actor called Solomon Mikhaels who was executed under the order of Stalin, just murdered one day with no right. particular justification of any sort. And it was just a day later that a very famous edict came down on all of the Soviet composers, condemning particularly the three greatest composers, besides Shostakovich, but Prokofiev and Khachaturian, and condemning them for formalism and for betraying them to the West. I mean, this was the Cold War heating up,
yes.
certainly.
Yes. Well, it's interesting that the piece that we just played, the second quartet, was written during a time when artists' creative minds had a certain amount of freedom because they could write about the war.
Right.
And it wasn't taken as this potential criticism of the Soviet state, which, of course, was not allowed to be criticized. And after the war, we find all of them sort of walking this line. They could still write about the war. The third quartet was written in 1946 about the war, but by 1948, Stalin decides that he really has to crack down. And for the next 5 years, Shostakovich's music, along with a great many others, practically every great creative mind in Russia was blacklisted at best, if not imprisoned at that point.
Yeah.
All of these performers also, not just creative people, were not allowed to do their art.
No, it's interesting because Shostakovich went to the family of Solomon Mikhail, this actor who had been murdered by Stalin, and said, I wish that I had gone in his place. I mean, which is so dark, it makes him sound like a character out of Dostoevsky, but I don't think he was, there's no self-dramatization there. He felt that. So what you're saying is that this is not a man who kowtowed to the Soviets any more than he had to keep himself and his family out of prison.
Well, he, you know, his hands are not completely clean either, but it's very easy for us to judge what it was like, what we would do in that situation.
Yeah.
Well, we would never have signed this edict, or we never would have made this speech, and we never would have joined the Communist Party, which he did later around 1960. But it's very hard for us to imagine the kind of terror that these people lived under, and what decisions we would make if we were in that kind of situation.
This next piece that you're about to play comes just from this period, it's from 1949. Although I noticed that in the Grove Dictionary it says he withheld the first performance until 1953, which is not coincidentally the death of Stalin in 1953.
He wrote very little music during the time that he was blacklisted, but fortunately for us, he wrote two string quartets, the fourth and fifth.
Mm.
And thankfully, Stalin died in 1953, and this music was performed soon thereafter.
What will we hear in this movement?
The last movement of the fourth quartet, which is based on Jewish music. Now, he never really used Jewish themes per se, but he wrote music that was based on the Jewish music, Jewish folk music. And we're going to play this last movement of the fourth quartet, which really has a wonderful klezmer flavor to it. Shostakovich loved Jewish music because he felt that somehow it was compatible to his own way of thinking about art, that he loved the fact that there was more than one level to it. For instance, when they danced a dance, there was always a twinge of sadness. And when they were singing something sad, there was often an element of humor that would be injected into it. And he loved this dual aspect of Jewish folk music. And I think that's one of the reasons why he uses it here. But also, clearly, he would not have been allowed to write Jewish music during this time, and actually through most of his life. And one of the greatest examples of his being a dissident composer is the fact that he kept coming back to Jewish music throughout his career. And every time these pieces were performed, even later after Stalin had died, he was taking a big risk.
Yeah. Let's hear this particular piece, though. This is the finale, the fourth movement of the Quartet Number 4 in D major, music composed in 1949 and held back until after the death of Stalin in 1953. Shostakovich, Quartet Number 4. Here's the Emerson String Quartet.
Thank you.
As usual, when I hear a piece of Shostakovich music that fades away like that, I am speechless, which doesn't work so hot on the radio, but I mean, I think everyone listening feels it. I suppose when you play music like this, sometimes you must find that the audience just must sit silent. Eighth Quartet, some of these pieces.
They certainly did during our recordings. It nearly killed them.
That's
people
right.
Came up to us for years after this project first began saying how they nearly died during our recording sessions in Aspen, where we had the audience in the hall. But we did feel that the inclusion of the public was so powerful in this process that you could actually hear them holding their breath in the silences.
If you've just tuned in the last couple of minutes, I should say that was the Emerson String Quartet coming to you today from the Academy of Arts and Letters in New York City. That was a movement of a Shostakovich quartet, the quartet number 4. We have the finale. As you folks can begin to get an idea, if you didn't already have it, it's impossible to cover everything of Shostakovich's life and music in just one-hour program. But we've created a special website devoted to the life of Shostakovich and especially concentrating on the string quartets, and you can visit that site anytime. You'll find it at stpaulsunday.org. And that reminds me to let people know, I've tuned in the last couple of minutes, that we're making this program on Shostakovich with the Emerson String Quartet, coming to you from the American Academy of Arts and Letters in New York City. I'm Bill McLaughlin, and we're tuned to St. Paul Sunday. And now we're going to turn to the final piece of music on today's program, and this is a complete quartet, although it's in one single movement, a 20-minute long movement, mostly slow. What a remarkable piece. This is the 13th Quartet. How did you happen to settle on this as the piece with which to close today's program?
We wanted to have the most difficult piece for Larry Dutton, actually.
That's because the viola is so busy throughout, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a very hard viola part, very much exposed, especially at the end. The viola goes up into the stratosphere, above even where the violins would feel comfortable.
Yeah, and the overall feeling of the tune is that, as we mentioned, it's largely slow, although in the center it gets lively with an almost dance episode that seems to come out of nowhere.
Well, Shostakovich loved jazz music, and he wrote 2 jazz suites. Of course, they were not allowed to be performed during much of his life, but they were discovered later. And this middle section sounds sort of like a jazz session in hell, sounds like to me. He was, at this stage in his life, he was very ill. Spent a lot of time in the hospital, and in fact, the 13th and 15th quartets were written largely while he was in the hospital, and possibly even lying in bed and with taking painkillers. And there's a certain hallucinogenic aspect to this piece, which we've always felt was made it really unique, and also gives you a good idea of where he was at toward the end of his life.
Yeah. In fact, I came across a line in a letter to his friend Isaac Bleekman, and he said, this is Shostakovich speaking, he said, if my hands were cut off, I would still continue to write music with a pen held between my teeth.
It's interesting he says that, because actually one of the disease that he was fighting was some sort of neurological condition, which made it incredibly painful for him to write music, to actually physically hold the pen and write the music. And in fact, there are passages in this quartet where these very loud, we're holding a note and there's a loud part within that note, like an accent within the note.
Mm-hmm.
And this is apparently comes from this shock treatment that he was being given at the time.
It's
horrific.
That autobiographical, in a way. Actually, I found, and I think if you will give me permission, a wonderful poem of Anna Akhmatova, dedicated to Shostakovich. She calls it simply music, and that word in Russia, like la musica in Italian, is feminine. So here's the setting that she has for this 13th quartet. In her, something miraculous burns, chiseling the edges under our very gaze. She alone speaks to me when others fear to come near. When my last friend had averted his eyes, she stayed with me in the grave and sang like the very first thunderstorm, or as if all the flowers had suddenly started to talk. It's a poem called Music of Anna Akhmatova, dedicated to DDS, Dmitri Shostakovich. Let's hear the Emerson String Quartet now play the quartet in B-flat minor, number 13, Music of Dmitri Shostakovich. Here's the Emerson String Quartet.
Thank you. Thank you.
What a desolate landscape he paints. What a desolate and beautiful landscape he paints. With those frightening tapping sounds that seem to come from nowhere. I suppose we should let folks in know what that was. First of all, the piece that we just heard.
There's nothing wrong with your radio.
No, nothing wrong with the radio. And nothing wrong with that performance by the Emerson String Quartet of the 13th Quartet of Dmitri Shostakovich, the B-flat minor quartet. Well, Larry Dutton is up in the highest register of the viola there at the end. You hear this mysterious sound like a tap at the window. I was just wondering, Eugene Drucker, does your insurance company know what you're doing to your Stradivarius? Tell us how you were making that sound.
I'm actually tapping the chin rest with my bow, and that's not what's literally called for in the score. I think it says something about tapping the belly of the instrument. The back of the instrument.
You're tapping it with the wood of the bow.
Yes, with the wood of the bow. So it's really more of an insurance problem for my bow than for my violin, because the chin rest is not an intrinsic part of the violin.
Yeah. In fact, where this sound first comes, you're playing, I don't know what they call it, it's almost like this salon music or Fellini film score music. Yeah, can we hear a little bit that spot where the two violins are playing a kind of dotted and triple, and David, you're playing kind of walking bass line. And Larry starts tapping on his instrument. And this is so bizarre. This music comes in the middle of this tragic winter scene. Mm-hmm. And can we hear just a little of this?
So what was that you called it? The
jazz scene from hell.
I love it. Remarkable. You know, one of the things I was struck with while I was listening to you play this particular quartet is that in the Soviet Union, Shostakovich was always under fire for being too modern. They use funny words like formalist and too self-indulgent and too personal and not speaking a language which the masses could understand. In the West, curiously enough, at the same time, Shostakovich was under fire from people like Pierre Boulez and some of the followers there who wanted a very strict kind of music developing, say, from where Anton Webern left off. And they found Shostakovich just the opposite. He was too reactionary, too conservative, too much in the musical language of Tchaikovsky and Rachmaninoff.
Well, it's interesting that I think that's one of the reasons why Shostakovich's music is making such a, well, not really comeback, but why it's really making itself known and people are not only accepting but growing to really love this music.
Yeah.
It comes at a time when contemporary music has taken this turn toward more tonal language and toward a language that will speak more to the masses. In a very ironic way, Shostakovich has accomplished really what he was asked to accomplish, which was to write music for the general masses.
Yeah. You know, there's another thing which is quite simple to consider, which is that Shostakovich died a quarter of a century ago, and by now, clouds of dust are starting to settle, and we're starting to see a very great composer in his entirety, not as part of propaganda from either side. And it occurs to me that what we need in the final stages of this realization is not only great historians to go back and eyewitnesses where those exist and are willing to speak, but something like what the four of you done, which is to take these 15 quartets of Shostakovich and realize them, make them your own, and make them ours as a result. It's a tremendous achievement. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to make this program. This is the Emerson String Quartet is bringing out a brand new set of the complete Shostakovich string quartets, all 15 of them on Deutsche Grammophon. Go get it, folks. It's going to be wonderful to hear them. And this is it's like taking Shakespeare into your house. I mean, this is something you live with for years, grow into. You'll have favorites, and you'll add new favorites to as you go on.
Or at least Dostoevsky or Chekhov.
Yeah.
Thanks. One thing I would like to say, though, about Shostakovich's music, there's a lot we've talked about today about the context and the political setting of all of this, and it certainly helps to understand, in any case, it helps to understand what a composer has gone through in terms of really appreciating his music. But the music does stand on its own, and even if we didn't know anything about Shostakovich, I think these pieces would be masterpieces and very moving for the audience.
Exactly right. It's tremendous music, and we can all find our own stories in it. That's what makes it so universal. All the time we have today. Thanks so much for doing this. I'd like to thank once again my great friends, the Emerson String Quartet, Philip Setzer and Eugene Drucker, the two violinists. Lawrence Dutton is our violist. David Finkel, our friend, is the cellist. Thanks so much for taking the time to do this. I know how busy you are because you're just about to go and do this same series at Tully Hall and then in London. Thanks for doing this for Public Radio and all of us.
Great to be here.
You folks, I hope you enjoyed the program today. And if you'd like to drop us a note or even ask us a question about Shostakovich or anything else, you can write to us at sunday@npr.org. We're going to start answering some of your mail on our website. The website you'll find at stpaulsunday.org. That's our show for this week, folks. Stay tuned for all the great programming coming up on this public radio station. Have a wonderful week, and make certain to tune in next week and join us for St. Paul Sunday.
St. Paul Sunday is made possible by a major grant from the Minnesota-based General Mills Foundation, supporting excellence in education, human services, and the arts. Additional funding has been provided by the National Endowment for the Arts and by this Public Radio International station. St. Paul Sunday is produced by Minnesota Public Radio in the Maud Moon Weyerhaeuser Music Studio. Today's broadcast was recorded at the American Academy of Arts and Letters. Your host for the series is Bill McLaughlin. The senior producer is Mary Lee. The music producer is Steve Barnett. And the associate producer is Vaughn Ormsepp. The engineers are DeHung Situ and Tom Mudge. And the production engineer is Michael DeMarc. The St. Paul Sunday website is produced by Nancy Blakestead. This is Marianne Sullivan.
PRI, Public Radio International.